stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. They call it stormy Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad. Wednesday's worse, Thursday's all so sad. Yes, the eagle flies on Friday, Saturday I go out to play. Yes, the eagle flies on Friday, Saturday I go out to play. And then on Sunday I go to church and I kneel down and pray. Lord have mercy on me. Oh Lord have mercy, Lord have mercy on me. Lord have mercy, my heart's in misery. You know I'm crazy about my baby, won't you send my baby back to me? My baby, won't you send my baby back to me? Oh, have mercy, send her home to me.
Black Plastic on the Mutiny Radio.fm is what you're listening to now. I'd like to thank Mr. Lou Rawls singing with the Les McCann Band because the can. Tell us the best on Ray Monday. Give us some money if you can. We need it more than a lot of other people, but less than some.
Baby, And welcome to the Weekly Review. I have two guests here who have joined me. Please introduce yourselves.
My name is Lenora Lee.
And my name is Ian Huynh.
Thanks for being here. And there's an upcoming dance performance that we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. So you joined us a few months ago. It's hard to keep track of the time these days. And the last performance we saw was just really impactful. It was over on Angel Island. And I just, I can't say how touching it was. It was just really incredible. So,
what were your thoughts about that as an experience for an audience member?
And first, we should also, the full name of the performance was
Within These Walls, and we created a sequel named Dreams of Flight.
Yes.
It was an immersive multimedia dance performance that was staged at the Angel Island Immigration Station on Angel Island State Park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was my first time being to Angel Island, so just being in that space in nature that's so close to us felt pretty, it just felt like a lot to be there in that space, and then also to be in the particular environment where folks had lived. I think I could really feel the energy of what had taken place there. Mm-hmm. And so it brought it's difficult to put into words. It felt like, I just felt like all these emotions being in this space and then seeing, hearing these stories, hearing people's words shared and interacting with the dancers and having, sharing, it just felt, there are so many different, it's difficult, yeah, it's difficult to put into words. It just felt like it was touching on so many senses because it wasn't just visual, it wasn't just audio, it was more, it was interactive as well, and then also spiritual, I think, to be in the same place that people were before and to not be there at the same time as them and still to witness them in a way.
That particular immigration station was open between 1910 and 1940. It burned down, the administration building burned down in 1940, so they moved it to the mainland. But during that time, there were approximately 1 million immigrants processed at that station, which most people, I think, maybe even from the Bay Area, don't know about. And so of those 1 million immigrants, about 170,000 were Chinese. And because there was a Chinese Exclusion Act in place, many of the Chinese were held under scrutiny and held there for much longer periods of time, and they were interrogated and basically imprisoned until they can prove their innocence. And maybe Hien was in the piece for both renditions, both in 2017 and in 2019, and I think he can talk a little bit about maybe the differences between both of those performances, even though we restaged it for this past May. We added a sequel, but there were differences in the actual approach to the audience members and the way that we came kind of charged and activated the second time, empowered with a lot of information from the first round, but also realizing that, you know, we had this ability to contribute to this dialogue and what in terms of what's happening in the current time.
Yeah, the first time we performed it, yeah, we had no idea of its reach and its profound impact in that moment. So the second time coming around this year performing it, we knew what was at stake, and we tried our best to dive deeper into the stories that we were sharing. And Lenora gave me the opportunity to also meet with the mother of the person whose character I was based off of. So we had a lunch date together, and she shared with us a bit more of what happened to him after. And so with all that information in mind and what it felt to have lunch with her, then to go on to performing the piece the second time around, it was new. Was new, and it felt deeper, and I think this time we ended on a much more hopeful tone, a sense of spaciousness and allowance and hope.
Yeah,
Hien played the character of Wang Gongju, and his daughter Penelope Wang was able to, during that luncheon, share quite a bit about her father, who he was as a person, his character, his accomplishments. She gave some hints as to what his detention time could have been like and how he was a bit of a dreamer and he was always looking for that sense of hope and accomplishment and working really hard and achieving. So it was exciting to then build the sequel with this knowledge and then to have certain sequences feature family, old family photos of him and the rest of their kin, and for Hien to be able to embody the essence of him more. Yeah, it was quite exciting. And just a note on that, this year we received 2 awards. Oh. So Hien received, you want to just talk about your award? Well, the piece itself from 2017 won an Outstanding Production Award from the Isadora Duncan Dance Awards Committee. And this was we were the first recipients of it. It's a brand new category. And what it represents is a high level of achievement in all of the categories, whether that's choreography, performance, visual design, text and music. So they felt it was at a high level for all the categories, and we're very honored to have received that one. and he won a special award as well for his performance.
Yeah, it was very special to be with the whole cast and production there, and to feel, you know, the work being shared and recognized on that level, and to see that, you know, when we can go out and share such important stories and feel the community receive it that way, and then to be honored right back, it was definitely a very beautiful evening. And my mother was in town that week, and you know, at that time I had no idea. I received the nomination, but I had no idea what the results were, so she came to the ceremony too, and then when they announced the name, I was able to bring her up on stage, and it made my life to see how happy she was and how proud she was.
Oh, that's beautiful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It was a really touching performance. And so you're also here to speak about the new performance that you have coming up the first weekend of November.
Yes, next weekend, November 1st through 3rd, we're performing a brand new piece entitled In the Skin of Her Hands at Dance Mission Theater, which is just a few blocks away from here. And we're going to be utilizing the different rooms in Dance Mission. They have a theater as well as two studios. So in the first half of the program, the audience members will get a chance to travel through the different rooms.
Oh, wow.
And to take a look at the vignettes and scenarios that we've been setting up. Mm-hmm. So for this piece, it's inspired by the experiences of those dealing with cancer, battling cancer, mm-hmm. specifically breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And in the last 2 months, I had the opportunity to interview 31 people.
Wow.
Some of them are cancer survivors and some are family members. Mm-hmm. Also an oncologist and two physical therapists. And it's been an incredible process. I would have to say that I learned so much, you know, from people, what people are willing to share mm-hmm. about what they've gone through. And everyone has had very different experiences. Some people have had, you know, very harsh physical dealings and chemotherapy and radiation, and others have had a lighter load in dealing with the illness. But regardless, there was just so much richness to what they were sharing that we're including a lot of the voiceover bits of their stories within the piece. So you'll hear in the sound score probably almost everybody, wow. pretty much almost everybody in there sharing things. I could talk a little bit about, you know, some commonalities, but also differences between them. And I'd actually, maybe while Hian talks a little bit, I can open up some audio
sure.
from the interviews and prepare that for you.
Yeah.
So maybe Hian can talk a little bit about the genesis of the project and how we created the work so far.
Yeah, I'm curious as to what inspired it.
Yeah, so... Lenora opened up and shared with us that her sister Karina was diagnosed with breast cancer, and so that sort of set the tone of how, you know, important and how close this work was going to be. And so at that in that realm too, we had an opportunity to take a workshop with aerial dance company Bandaloop. Mm-hmm. And so we trained with them for the beginning of the year, and some of us trained during the summer. So we learned how to essentially fly. And just seeing how much Lenora took on, because she's, you know, they're interviewing over 30 people and hearing all these different stories and perspectives, and I couldn't even imagine how heavy that could be. You know, here in the dance studio, just hearing the stories and narratives play, but I can't even imagine, you know, actually meeting each and every one and, you know, being with their stories. So in this sense, this project feels huge in how there's just, so many affected and so many family members. It just everyone is together on this.
Yes.
Yeah, and I very, very much look forward to opening day or the whole weekend as well, because I could just imagine, you know, those that are being interviewed are showing up, their family, their loved ones. So it's just, to me, it's like a gathering and just showing up to support and fight for this cause.
Yeah, it is something that I think affects every, like, I don't think I know someone who doesn't know someone who has been affected by breast cancer. It feels like it's such a, unfortunately, ubiquitous disease that it's, yeah, it's affected so many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what you're about to hear is an excerpt of something that we did. We performed an excerpt at the Jurassic Resident Artist Program in Woodside, California last weekend. And so the excerpt that you will hear right now is from a woman named Valerie So. She's a professor and a filmmaker at San Francisco State University. And her thoughts on her experiences with breast cancer.
Okay.
You know, this is the funny thing about me is that I do a lot of social media. And so I posted it on social media pretty much as soon as I started treatment. And then after a while, I started posting a lot on social media. Like, I would post, like, when I was getting my chemo or, like, you know, my various hair or hats or wigs or whatever. And I think people enjoyed sort of following that journey for whatever reason. So for me, it was always very transparent. I have another friend who's got, it's some form of leukemia, and she's gone through treatment twice. Like, she's done that thing where they take out, like, do something with her bone marrow, and then she has to be in isolation for a month. Like, really intense. And she said she thinks it's really important for people to know when you have cancer, because she thinks it's a public health crisis, right? She thinks it's not just like, people don't just happen to be getting this. There's, like, environmental reasons why people are getting this all the time. And so for her, it was almost like this thing is like, she wants people to know that something needs to be done. Yeah. Right. Some people worry about job security too, like if they're gonna be discriminated against because they're sick. And again, you know, I'm really lucky because I am in a position where I have job security and I'm protected, so. But I could see that. I mean, they can't legally fire you, but they could certainly do find other ways to let you go. So that was really helpful for me, just to not worry so much about why it happened, because then what happens is you stop thinking it's something that I did, right? It's something I have to blame myself for, some flaw in my life. And then for me, it was just like getting through it at that point, and just always thinking, focusing on getting through whatever treatment I was doing.
Yeah, so that was an excerpt from Valerie So's interview. And what you'll hear right now are two sections. One is from a woman who shared about her experience, and then from an oncologist who I interviewed. Her name is Pamela Munster. She works at UCSF. She's a researcher and an oncologist. And she had a lot of insight in terms of sharing about what her patients deal with, and she's written a book as well. So we can go ahead and listen to that.
In oncology, where there are things coming up all the time, new information, nothing is 100% right. I think that caretakers try their best, but the knowledge platform is always changing, which is a good thing. I think we are learning more all the time.
My name is Pamela Munster. I'm a Swiss native. I came to the U.S. when I was 28. My professional life is really focused on developing new treatments for people with advanced cancer. My focus is actually breast cancer. And then I have a particular interest in younger women and fertility and hereditary cancer. So it was quite surprising that I was then diagnosed with breast cancer at 48. And I was sort of like not feeling that I met any criteria of, you know, we don't have a large cancer family. My father's a single child. So I found out that I have a BRCA2 mutation. So all of a sudden I found myself with a disease where I'm really an expert in. And it was an interesting position to be in. You know, on one hand, I knew so much about this disease. And on the other hand, as a patient, you realize how little one actually knows. So I wrote a book, Twisting Fate, about the perspective as a physician and patient. And a lot of what I'm going through is like really through the initial stages of what the patient experienced, what the medical science behind is. But then also how this phenomenon of the cancer blues, how significant the part depression, part it's not just depression, it's this incredible uncertainty. Depression is just one part, but there's another really strong feeling that's really hard to place or explain to someone unless you have been there, and that's this uncertainty that comes with the loss of your immortality. And that sort of like black vortex that people fall into. I think everyone has to find their own ways of self-calming or accepting. For some people it's faith, for some people it's friendship, and for other people it's exercise. And hopefully for many it's all of them. And I think a lot of it is time. The way to acceptance is not easy. And you know, I grew up in Switzerland. There's a lot more pressure on people in the US to be happy, and that is particularly prevalent in California. California is my absolute favorite place to live, but it's also a challenging environment to live in. There's the sense here the sky is the limit, but that also gives you that need to constantly reach for the sky, right? When you could allow yourself a day of non-reaching. You know, there's clearly factors that are well known and they are clear, and there's nothing much you can do about it. And one of them is like having a hereditary cancer mutation, like BRCA1 and 2 at the highest risk for breast cancer. Like if you have BRCA1 or 2 mutation, you have a 70% risk of having cancer, breast cancer over life. And then there's other mutation that have a lower risk in the 20 to 40% is like ATM check to and many other mutations. And then, of course, there are environmental factors. Obesity. Alcohol has been associated with an increased risk of breast cancer, and frankly, excessive alcohol is bad for everybody, right? Because there's a lot of heart disease associated with obesity. It's like liver doesn't like a lot of alcohol either. And then other risk factors are excessive estrogen and progesterone exposure has been associated, but is a magnitude lower than hereditary mutations. Lack of exercise or sedentary lifestyle is clearly associated with an increased risk for breast cancer. And exercise is valuable on so many levels that I would encourage every woman to exercise regularly. It just does a lot of good things for overall health, overall emotional well-being. Nice to go out with friends and walk through a forest and just sit in a cafe and smoke. So, and other risk factors are, we don't know yet, maybe lack of sleep. Sleep has become a much more well-known of a risk, a negative health factor. If you don't sleep enough, how this pertains to breast cancer is unclear. Some Scandinavian countries have now made breast cancer and shift worker a work-related illness. So, and there's clearly emerging data. I think like on a medical front, we have a lot of good resources, a lot of good treatment, there's a lot of advances, and we make a lot of progress when it comes to breast cancer. When it comes to equipping people with the way to handle it, we do very poorly. And you know, mental health support in the US is abysmal at best, right? It's like there's virtually no support, you know, and what I see a lot is when you have a mastectomy, the surgical impact is quite significant.
You got to get the awareness out there, the lymphatic system, and how important it is. It's a second circulatory system that is so key. And doing a whole body approach into making the body work as a whole unit is really so important.
These treatments between chemo and radiation, you're killing a lot of cells, and it all has to go through your whole lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system is what keeps us alive. It just can't process or clean everything out fast enough. So with my radiation, that was when I started having issues of swelling and attracting a lot of fluids that doesn't get out unless you work on manually trying to get it moving out of the area.
You got to get the scar tissue broken down. You got to get the fluid moving.
With the radiation, now you get scarring. You got the swelling. And then, of course, you get the blistering. Swelling is a function of the ribs not moving. If you get the ribs moving, you're going to use the whole body pump to start getting the whole vascular system moving, because the lymphatic system runs with the vascular system.
Well, you know, this is the funny thing about me is that I do a lot of social media. And so I posted it on social media pretty much as soon as I started treatment. And then after a while, I started posting a lot on social media. Like, I would post, like, when I was getting my chemo, or, like, you know, my various hair or hats or wigs or whatever. And I think people enjoyed sort of following that journey for whatever reason. So for me, it was always very transparent. I have another friend who's got... it's some form of leukemia, and she's gone through treatment twice. Like, she's done that thing where they take out, like, do something with her bone marrow, and then she has to be in isolation for a month. Like, really intense. And she said she thinks it's really important for people to know when you have cancer, because she thinks it's a public health crisis, right? She thinks it's not just, like, people don't just happen to be getting this. There's, like, environmental reasons why people are getting this all the time. And so for her, it was almost like a thing.
So what you will hear in a second is a clip that I recorded with my sister.
We talked a little bit about the word
Carina.
Of this, you know, and I think that it does describe the initial onset of metastatic cancer, because you're in this overwhelming dark place where you didn't even know that something has just taken over your entire body. You know, it's everywhere. It's in every bone in your body, in your organs. And you didn't even know that it was in there growing. And all of a sudden, you have this impending possibility of death. And you have to pull your shit together and swim. And swim up towards the light and keep treading water and find your way out of the abyss, holding it together, being strong mentally and physically. And it's not an overnight process. It's keep treading water and going towards this, swimming towards the surface for months and months and months until you get a handle on things, until you're a little bit lighter and you're floating a little bit easier, you know, until your body is fighting those cancer cells and building a defense in your own body. And so that word, it makes a lot of sense for the first I think year. That sort of sums up the struggle of being thrown in the deep end and then having to either sink or swim. So of course chose to swim, but, you know, and to come out ahead and floating and sort of relaxing now relaxing and floating. Yeah.
What do you feel has influenced you along the way? Motivated?
You're listening to the Weekly Review on Mutiny Radio.
But then I immediately thought of my grandma. She worked two jobs for as long as I can remember. That example of being such a hard worker and coming from Colombia with barely anything. I mean, she has more than any of us financially and like assets and everything. She has more than all of us put together, you know, and that's very impressive, you know, and she worked for every single bit of it. You know, she's smart, you know, she's a very good businesswoman, and she came knowing just Spanish.
She is feisty, she's a warrior, she's a go-getter, I think if death can come knocking at her door, she will say, I'm busy, come back later. Like my little granddaughter says, she's strong, intelligent, fuerte, valiente, inteligente, and, courageous.
If there's anything I want to do, then I should go do it. Don't wait. I was at a low point, but now, after a year or two, now I'm relaxed, happy. Although I am doing less work, the money is not the most important. The most important is if the person is living happily.
I mean, literally, like, life is too short to put up with idiocies. And I'm sure that urgency comes from being sick. You know, you kind of realize that you could die any day. But at the same time, you know, I think I really appreciate life a lot more, too.
And maybe that was something that we needed to go through to appreciate. To appreciate who she is and give her the best that we can.
Maybe things happen for a reason, not always. But I like to think that maybe this illness is giving us an opportunity for exploring another type of love with her.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for playing these clips. There's a lot there. Yeah. Something I was curious about was, what was the process like in terms of, I mean, you spoke to a lot of folks and there's only a limited amount of time, I would imagine, for the performance. So what was the process like in terms of selecting which pieces to use?
Sure. Yeah, we put a call out earlier this year for people who might be interested in sharing their stories, and word got spread that way. We also publicized it in different ways, and then I think it spread through word of mouth as well. Mm-hmm. And so, of the 31 interviews in the last 2 months, not only were we creating the dance material together, but I was on the backside, you know, going through the interviews multiple times, trying to pinpoint either experiences that I felt were very unique amongst the group, mm-hmm. or certain things that were commonalities. And I felt that it was also very important to have the oncologist and the healthcare professional perspective as well. It was challenging and continues to be challenging because I feel like so much of what people shared is important and probably, you know, not very well known by the general public. Mm. To give an example, there was one woman who was at General Hospital, and her regular doctor was not around, but she was dealing with the chemotherapy, and she ended up falling into a coma. And they weren't sure why, and the family was not sure if she was going to come out of it. So they were making preparations, you know, considering selling the house and trying to figure out how to cover the costs if she does pass. But by some miracle, she came back and she was able to come out of it. And they realized later, after her regular doctor had come back, is that she had hepatitis B, and after each chemo session, they were supposed to have tested her blood, but they didn't realize that her liver failed, basically. And then because of her case, then they put into motion certain practices to make sure that everybody gets tested. And, you know, I just feel like it was an unfortunate situation as well, because she's an immigrant woman, and the way that she shared it with me was that it was a miracle, and I definitely felt that. But I also felt, were there some barriers that she had to deal with due to language, perhaps, but also, you know, having people who are familiar with the healthcare system here, or have lived their lives or generations of their lives here, who could advocate for her or could have advocated for her. So there were actually a lot of interesting occurrences that struck me, and where I felt like I had to deal with certain questions about being ethical and my place of privilege, and when should I speak and when should I not. But really, I felt like it wasn't my place to say anything or make particular comments, but really it was giving them the space to share about what occurred.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of different stories, and we, you know, those of us that got a chance to listen to it were quite moved by all of them, and particularly the resilience and this quest to live, you know, and the overarching feeling of not being willing to succumb to the disease. You know, of course, there were people who passed, and of family members of people who passed that I got a chance to interview as well. Mm. And so they shared another perspective on, you know, their roles as caretakers and how that could be challenging and require a lot of energy and different emotional and psychological tactics to keep their loved ones hopeful and pushing forward, as well as their research for various different and new methods of treatment, you know. So it was a very, I feel like I'm just opening the door to this type of research, honestly, because there's been such a short span of time for me to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. But I will have to say, I will say publicly that if folks do want to share their stories with me, I'm more than welcome to continue this interview process to be able to capture stories.
Oh,
you know, I think the project will continue in various forms past this performance next weekend.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything, Ian? Maybe Ian can talk a little bit about the rehearsal process and how we've been dealing with the material and putting things together. Because for Ian, who came in 2 years ago, we've done more site-specific works together. And the first one was on Angel Island. The second one was in a swimming pool. Then Angel Island again. Mm-hmm. This is our first opportunity to work together inside a proscenium theater.
Yeah, alongside that, you know, last year, Lenora said we were going to do a project underwater, and I didn't know how to swim, and our other dancer, Johnny, didn't know how to swim either. So we jumped in and we learned how to swim for the project. Oh, and wow. And this year we're engaging in aerial work, and neither of us have done, or many of us in the company haven't done it before. So now we're flying together. So it's been really fun to just jump in these unknown territories for us and to explore in that way. And alongside, you know, feeling the parallel, just essence of navigating through unpredictable circumstances and situations and pathways, and how we can support one another, and how, you know, we may be limited in certain ranges, but then there's also things that are undiscovered in certain areas. So it's been a big kind of like boxes of mystery opening on the horizon. We're first time working together in a proscenium theater. Felt like so strange, because, you know, we're usually at the site in the building, with the audience, and so now to be shape-shifted into a certain section of a proscenium theater, I felt myself kind of like unfamiliar again to this. But then, yeah, I think what just keeps us going is just remembering that we're here honoring these stories that are being shared, and yeah, but part of me imagines, you know, like, particularly with this circumstance, it's sort of that unpredictability of it where you don't know your time frame sometimes. And it's like with your loved ones, you don't know how much time you have with them. And so there's like this unknown ticking clock sort of present. And so, yeah, my heart goes out to all those facing it together, and the bravery that entails, and also the, like Lenora was saying, the resiliency of how, you know, there's so many different ways of modes of research, and from your dietary to your spiritual well-being, and like all these things that support it, or just simply being with somebody you love, and how that captures and keeps you going, keeps you fighting. And so, yeah, it's been very warm and inspiring to be with.
As Hian mentioned earlier, you know, part of the inspiration for the project was when my sister got diagnosed last year. And at that time, we just were all caught off guard, and she had stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. So it had already spread from both breasts to the lymph nodes to her liver and her bones. And we were all just kind of scrambling, trying to figure out how best to support her, what would be the best mode of treatment for her. She was getting lots of different opinions from healthcare professionals that we knew or were related to. And so at that point, given what I felt I was capable of doing to help support, was I wanted to be able to interview her, and just for her to have the space to talk about whatever she wanted to share in terms of what she was going through, all the information she was learning, you know, how she felt her family was going through this simultaneously. She has 4 kids and she runs a business with her husband. So it was a huge kind of shift in her life, and it really forced her to turn the mirror on herself and take a look at how can I heal from this? You know, what is it that I need to shift in terms of my lifestyle to make the adjustments and give my body the space to heal? And so that was really it. It was that first interview with her where I felt, oh, wow. I'm just totally reminded, even though we grew up together, I was reminded, oh my gosh, my sister, she's a strong woman. You know, she's a fighter, and there's no doubt that she's just going to keep pushing, which she did. I mean, she's always problem solving. She's always trying to think of, you know, alternatives, ways to look at things, seeking out information. And so really, I mean, if I were to say, okay, how did she heal? Well, she figured it out, you know, she can figure it out. Like, she can come to, you know, the solutions to problems. And, but of course, you know, you're faced with this question of like, what's your time frame now? Mm-hmm. And how do we look at our time together?
Yes.
In a way that is generous, but also very clear, so that we can appreciate the time that we have together. And through this process for me, I did a lot of writing, actually, and I did, I could share some of that writing, but we did writing as a way for me to process it, like over time. And then we ended up building this piece you know, we have some financial support through grants, but because it was such a short timeline, really, we are still fundraising for this project.
Okay.
And so, especially if it's going to be an ongoing project, I think it's worth it to consider, you know, how can we support this type of research in the long run? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate all forms of art, and that can really open up conversations and bring people into spaces where they might not either feel comfortable or really know how to get involved, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate that you've put this together.
Thank you.
And also just highlighting so many voices and recognizing that every person has their own journey and their own perspective on how they handle a diagnosis.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I can share also the artistic collaborators in the project.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah,
yes.
So we're working with longtime collaborators, Olivia Tang with the media design, and saxophonist composer Francis Wong, and bassist Tatsuo Aoki, who's in Chicago. Francis is based here. And we're utilizing some existing music tracks with Tatsu's from his ensemble in Chicago. We're having some live vocalization and singing from three members of the group here during the show with a cast of seven. So we have Hien, we have Johnny Nguyen, Megan Lowe. So Megan has a background in aerial dance. She's been dancing with Flyaway Productions and teaching with Bandaloop. And we have Lin Huang, San San Kwan. San San teaches at UC Berkeley in dance and performance studies. We have Jory Horn, who also has experience in aerial dance. Yeah. And so we're excited to be bringing this to you. We can also offer tickets. So again, the performances are November 1st and 2nd at 8 o'clock. And November 3rd at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
The program runs a little over an hour. And then we're having a post-performance panels by some of the interviewees and healthcare professionals. So each night it'll be a different panel.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And if folks would like to purchase tickets, should they go to your website?
Yes. Okay. Yes, which is Lenora Lee Dance, LenoraLeeDance.com.
Great. Excellent. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
No, just we hope to see you there this weekend. Again, the performance is at Dance Mission, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Friday and Saturday will be at 8 p.m., and Sunday will be at 5 p.m. And yeah, it would be amazing if you all could come out and be with us, be with the interviewees, and just share that space and time to reflect, brainstorm and just be with each other during this moment in time.
Yeah, and I would imagine that each performance will be not only unique in that all performances are unique, and I would imagine that given the folks who will be there after wrap up.
We hope to see you there this weekend. Again, the performance is at Dance Mission, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Friday and Saturday will be at 8 p.m. and Sunday will be at 5 p.m. And yeah, it would be amazing if you all could come out and be with us, be with the interviewees, and just share that space and time to reflect, brainstorm and just be with each other during this moment in time.
Yeah, and I would imagine that each performance will be not only unique in that all performances are unique, and I imagine that given the folks who will be there afterwards, the conversations afterwards will be different as well.
Mm-hmm.
So folks could come every night and see a different performance.
Mm-hmm.
I can share a couple of writings. Hien has some writing as well that we did as part of this project and process. This is something that I wrote. I'll give a couple of short excerpts. Mm-hmm. I received a voicemail from my father who said, Karina's oncologist called and said the cancer has spread from both breasts to her lymph nodes, to her liver and bones. I hold myself up against the glass windows separating me and the pool from the lobby on the outside. I call my father and he confirms it. Standing in the shower, water flows from the pools of my eyes to cross the intersection of the chlorine water being rinsed from my skin down into the drain of forever. They said this type of cancer isn't detected on regular mammograms. It was only until I complained about the masses that they ordered the 3D ultrasound for me. The technician knew right away that it had spread. Through the blood and the bones, through the tissues and organs, infectious, seeking pathways of their own to new territory, new cells, inhabiting more and more space in her being. If it's not an uncommon type of cancer, why don't they screen as a preventative measure? Then they're missing entire populations who have this. We feel the rivers flowing through the depths of her veins, through the question of tomorrow, through the broken visions of the future, to the pale softness of her skin, holding the storm inside. Here's one more short one that's a little bit more general. The tides that ripple behind and in front, immersed in a sea, an ocean. The sunlight glistens across the tips of the waves out to the abyss of the horizon. The nerves calm. Everything releases to the beauty of this water all around, as wide as one can see, as deep as the center of the earth. Extended for thousands of years, for generations of life, hosting and giving birth to creatures abound. Look closer. What do you see?